Why are Chicago teachers on strike? And do you support the teachers' union or the school board in this contract dispute? Good morning, I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It is 8 minutes past 7 o'clock on this Tuesday, September 11th. We'll talk about the issues behind the strike in the nation's third largest school district. 29,000 teachers and support staff will not be on the job for the second day today, leaving the parents of 350-some thousand public school students looking for alternatives. Union leaders have said this is not about the money, but about working conditions and job security and reforms like using standardized tests to evaluate teachers. What do you think of this? What's your reaction to this strike? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. Our guest is Steve Correa, Associate Professor of Teacher Education at St. Norbert College in De Pere. Good morning.
Good morning.
Well, you know, I read that a lot of union leaders are saying this is not about the money. Is that accurate, do you think?
Well, I know I have a colleague in the economics department who always says when they say it isn't, you know it is. But I think generally it doesn't not involve money, but clearly there are other issues at work here. And, you know, to look at the Chicago teacher strike without a historical perspective of organized labor and what's happening with teacher unions across the country, and really a low morale point for a lot of professionals in education, really denies a valuable perspective for all this. So,
yeah, let's talk a little bit about that. This is a strike that does have national implications. We are in an election year, and Chicago, after all, is where our president had spent much of his political life.
Oh, sure. Somebody that had gone to sleep 5 years ago and woke up and found Democrats fighting each other and Democrats yelling at each other and going back and forth. Wow. I mean, Emanuel's the former chief of staff of the White House, and he's the one that's being blamed for a strike by a primarily Democratic or liberal teachers union. Boy, it sure can be very confusing to try to figure out who's on whose side.
Yeah, well, what is it that Rahm Emanuel and the school board is asking of the teachers that has them on the picket line?
Well, some of it does involve money. And you know, that you can't deny that. The original request from the teachers union was a nearly 29% salary increase over the course of the next master contract. In negotiations, one always stakes out a little bit more property than you think you're going to get. And that's just sort of the way the system works. The teachers union administration countered that we really don't have that kind of money. Now, interestingly, Chicago's one of those cities, not unlike other cities like New York, that have mayoral control of the schools, meaning that the mayor plays a central role in appointing the school board, and then there's various structures that allow other leaders to be able to be appointed. But the mayor, just like Bloomberg in New York, is the one that's held accountable. And people might remember that was proposed in Milwaukee.
That's right.
A few years back. So really, you have a single point person that's held accountable for all of these things. So it's not as if the school boards can be immediately recalled by unhappy voters. So this all falls in Emanuel's lap. And again, that idea of that concentration of power. Chicago presently has a school day that is one of the shortest in the nation and definitely the shortest for all urban school areas. It's about 5 hours and 45 minutes. Now, this is the little statistic that a lot of people say, oh my gosh, really? Students have less than 10 minutes of recess in elementary school, generally speaking, in elementary school. I can just imagine the energy that gets built up in that.
Yeah.
But they don't have a very long school day. So one of the things that Emanuel wanted to do was to lengthen the school day to 7 hours. Well, actually, he proposed 7.5. The issue there is, now on the surface, that sounds like a great idea. But then the teachers said, what are we going to do with this extra time? And I think that the idea was, well, the ball's in your court. You've got extra time. What do you want to do? Well, you said we needed it. Well, what do you want us to do? And they hadn't quite gotten to that point. Also, the teacher said, we're working more. You're going to want us to work. It ends up to be about an extra 2.5 weeks or so in the school year. And the teacher said, that's more work. We should get more pay. Chicago also has one of the shorter school years in the nation. It's about just over 175 days. The longest is about 185 days to 190. So, you know, we're not talking huge amounts, but Chicago's academic performance is also shocking for those that might not be aware of that. They have a graduation rate, a de facto education, a graduation rate of maybe 60%. And their non-white participation or graduation rate is very, very low. So critics are saying, let's see the performance, and then you might earn the pay. And they're countering that we have all of these social issues going on. We can't be held accountable for that which we cannot control. So Emanuel is just simply trying to get the school system up in terms of the number of days, the number of hours, the length of the day, and the teachers are arguing that that's more work, we need help, we need support, we need more teachers. And so that's why it's not exclusively money, although from what I heard this morning on the radio, I believe they think they've sort of settled the salary increase issues. It's these other issues that seem to be the sticking points.
Yes, and talk a little bit more about why the teachers object so much to teacher evaluations based on student performance.
Well, and, you know, looking at this from our Wisconsin perspective, of course, Wisconsin teachers do not have the ability to be able to bargain very much relative to schools and evaluations and workplace issues and those kind of things. But it's important to keep in mind that in Illinois, this is, and it used to be in Wisconsin, totally legal. It's a legal negotiation. So the teachers aren't doing necessarily anything illegal. Now, some people might consider it unsavory or improper, but it's not, it's definitely not illegal. But what the Chicago teachers are saying is that if you're going to use standardized testing to evaluate us, we don't have the controls over that, and therefore then our students are going to continue to perform poorly, and therefore then you're going to be removing teachers based on these standardized scores, and basically it's a that's not fair kind of thing.
Yeah, well, from your perspective as someone who teaches teachers, is that... You know, I mean, do they have a point? Is it fair to judge the quality of a teacher's performance by a standardized test score of a student?
I think that all teachers need to look at a wide constellation of assessment measures. And you have to, my opinion, you have to include standardized score measures in that whole assortment of measures that you do to be able to see the effectiveness of education. That being said, how that is factored in. Are we looking for growth? Are we looking for everybody has to get up to this bar? Are we looking at participation? What's the support mechanisms that are determined to help students to be able to get to a certain level? And I think it's that area, that void as to what do we do with these. And the idea is, I think the teachers, especially in Chicago and many across the state of Wisconsin, are afraid that it's just going to be a base measure. Everybody must get up to X percent, and therefore then if you're not there, you're going to be dismissed or fired or whatever the case it might be. And they're not necessarily saying that. So smart teachers and smart educators and leaders will be able to look at this and say, wow, you know, we have a 10% growth, we have a 15% growth, look at the context, look at the setting. And then we'll be able to show growth and improvement and development with this student. So, but this is a rather sophisticated assortment of data to be able to look at. And the teachers are kind of scared because it's never really happened before. And so, and from Chicago, nobody's quite able to articulate exactly how the test scores are going to factor in. So in the absence of knowledge, just like the little kid that looks at the vegetables on the plate and says, this looks yucky, I don't want it. I think the teachers are saying, we don't understand it, we don't want it.
Yeah. So how much do you think, Professor Correa, the Chicago teachers are looking at what happened in Wisconsin, the mood of the country today, the President Obama, you know, pushing for better school performance and teacher performance, and just saying we aren't going to take this anymore?
Boy, isn't that is just a $64,000 question? That is a big one. I think you need someone with political science expertise.
But you have a good political science hat too.
Well, I have some great colleagues who maybe I listen when they talk. Of course, Chicago is the home of the AFL and Samuel Gompers. So the AFT in Chicago was founded in 1916. So the fact that this strike is happening in Chicago should be of a surprise to no one. Mm-hmm. That this is the Midwest. The first national teacher, or the first significant teacher strike in a large urban district happened in St. Paul, Minnesota, we think, back about 1946.
I didn't know
that.
Where
a little over 1,000 teachers walked out. They were upset with an assortment of things. Interestingly, not really pay. They said they needed textbooks that had been published in a recent decade, and a whole variety of other things, of course, after the close of World War II. So the Midwest has always been a place of strong union support and union organizing. So again, we can't really look at this issue, as you were saying, without looking at these issues going on. And Chicago is a place where, now this is an AFT union, that's the American Federation of Teachers, and they have always identified themselves as a teachers union, not a professional association like the NEA. And back at this time around World War I, the NEA did exist, but it was much more of a superintendent's organization meant to control teaching and the education field from a top-down. It wasn't a bottom-up, worker-organized kind of thing. So teachers have low morale. I mean, again, listeners may think that that's justified or not, but they do. They're under attack. Boy, almost 500,000 teachers have lost their job in the United States in the last few years. And Chicago, that's part of it's one of the issues. What do we do with the laid off teachers? How are they brought back in? So this type of thing really does embolden teachers that if this is what it takes, this is an option that is viable. And people are going to see, you know, how this comes out. And of course, because it's an in-house fight, the Republicans, it's a presidential year, the Republicans are just trying to decide, wow, how can we make this look good?
Yeah.
Which you do politically, that no one's faulting that, goodness. And so, they're looking at this as an issue. Now, Los Angeles is the nation's second largest teachers union, and they have an unsettled master contract. So you can bet that people are saying, how does this play out? Are there lessons to be learned? How far can we go? Will parent support last? I mean, Chicago's finest right now are probably the nation's largest child care providers, because you can bet they're on the streets trying to make sure that everybody's safe. And they're scrambling in Chicago for the 350,000 students that don't have a place to go during the day.
We will take calls for Steve Correa, Associate Professor of Teacher Education at St. Norbert College in De Pere, as we talk about the ongoing Chicago teachers strike, entering its second day today, talking about the issues behind this strike and welcoming your reactions and questions. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. It's going to be sunny and very warm today. Highs will be in the 80s. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. You're listening to the Ideas Network. I'm Joy Cardine. Stay tuned. Coming up after 8 this morning, it's On Your Money. Financial planner Kevin McKinley will have information and advice on your personal finances coming up after 8. Right now, we're talking about the Chicago teacher strike with Steve Correa, associate professor of teacher education at St. Norbert College in De Pere. And our first caller is Gary in Racine. Hi, Gary.
Good morning. We're talking about bigger issues behind this. When we talk about the money issue, the teachers say it's not about the money, but yet when they're asked to put in a seven-hour day, which I would love, they're asked to put in a seven-hour day, they say, well, oh, 7 hours, we want more money. So it is about the money. So let's not kid ourselves about that. They're asking for I believe they settled on a 16% increase, I'm not sure about that number, over 4 years. Now, I'd like a straw poll of how many people got 6% over 4 years in this economy. I'll tell you what, I lost 30% and nobody's knocking on the door to pick it for me. Now, go about the bigger issue. The bigger issue is this. The ideas, the liberal ideas, the predominantly liberal ideas that the teachers' union has is exactly the problem. You can't have the union running the company. Because when the workers run the company, they say, well, we have to have this, this, and this for these kids. And then they say, well, no, we can't control the kids. But we don't want to discipline the kids, but we can't control the kids. We can't teach them anything because they aren't in school, but we don't want a longer day. And this is what happens when you have this, and this, what I, what I'm going to...
Yeah, because I'm sorry, Gary, there's a lot there, and I'm trying to... Steve Correa, first off, He sounded like he didn't like the amount of a pay increase that the teachers, it seems that they have settled on, about 16%.
Well, one of the things that I would commend the caller, I believe his name was Gary, about is he's exactly right. This does deal with a lot of issues. I mean, this is, you know, the major topic of a social studies class. Mm-hmm. We have economics with pay raises. We have politics with the power of a teachers' union. We've got then political perspectives because liberal, conservative, those words popped in there too. We also have some strong examples of sociology with some of the classes and the economic challenges and the different races and that are involved in school and the performance of schools with relative to those students. And then put that in the wide perspective of the length of the day, the compensations the teachers have, and then the fact of I know they say we're out of the recession, but I got to tell you, I still think we're in year four of mm-hmm. this recession. So to be able to look at this, nobody is going to look at this teachers union issue in Chicago within a small little lens. You're going to look at it into this broad perspective. So I think Gary's exactly right. Now, what he's talking about, though, I think he's very insightful in that on the one hand, you're saying that you want input into the day, but on the other hand, you don't want to say that you're going to bring about changes with the students with that input. And again, mayoral control in Chicago, so it rests in Rahm Emanuel's office. And that was the design, that was the purpose of mayoral control. That's really what I think this comes down to, is you know, these two models are really almost the opposite of each other. You have a decentralized control, like a worker's workplace, and then you have centralized mayoral control. So this is attempting to finesse that issue, and how Chicago is going to bring, now, this word can mean a lot of things, but accountability, or let's just say increasingly positive outcomes for students that are in the school. And that's the one that they're not into. And of course, as Gary said, you know, a lot of people out there have lost money in retirement accounts and lost jobs. And boy, you know, a 16% increase, that's not a way to get a lot of people to be on your side, you know, irrespective of one's political perspective. It's very difficult to kind of engender sympathy for people when they see that. So I think he's got some good points.
Gary, thank you so much for calling. Eric in Medford is next. Hello, Eric.
Hi. I had a couple of things to say. First of all, I guess I kind of take issue with the previous caller saying that, you know, with the money issue, To me, it makes perfect sense. And, you know, full disclosure, I happen to be a teacher as well. But it seems to me they're extending their workday. I see no problem with compensating them accordingly. But I guess my real issue is with the standardized testing, because, I mean, you know, money aside, I think every single teacher would tell you they don't go into this for the money. If they liked money, they'd do something else. But I think standardized testing kind of just flies in the face of what we expect out of our educators to begin with. As a recent graduate of the UW system, we spend many, many hours learning how to cater to different learning styles and learning how to adapt to many different students and their individual needs. So I guess my basic thought is, how can we have a standardized test when there's absolutely no such thing as a standardized student?
We have just a minute before news. Can you give it a quick stab, Steve Correa?
Well, I think that, you know, the caller's correct. You know, Philadelphia was the first city that had a teacher strike based on calls for a longer day. Teachers want multiple measures to measure student learning, because he's exactly right. There isn't a standardized child. But the standardized test scores are going to be part of this. I think the issue in Chicago is, what part of it?
We will talk more about the issues behind the Chicago teachers' strike with Steve Correa, Associate Professor of Teacher Education at St. Norbert College in De Pere. Public school teachers in Chicago are on strike for the first time in 25 years, the strike entering day two this morning, leaving some 350,000 students stuck outside the classrooms. And we are welcoming your thoughts and questions about this. 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org, or post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. We are talking about the Chicago teachers' strike this hour, and we're welcoming your questions and reactions for our guest professor of education. 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It is 7:36 on this Tuesday, September 11th. Our guest is Steve Correa, Associate Professor of Teacher Education at St. Norbert College in De Pere. And we'll get back to the phones right away. Jim in Sheboygan is with us next. Hello, Jim.
Hello, good morning. There's an exact parallel between what happened in Wisconsin and what's happening in Chicago. It's all about power and responsibility. They want the power, don't want the responsibility when it comes to teacher testing and teacher evaluation. There's no magic. I have a lot of respect for teachers, but it's not a magical position. There can be accountability built into it. When you have Chicago, Milwaukee, and Madison, three of the largest progressive areas holding our kids for the last many generations, producing, I think your guests used the term, dismal results. By the way, Madison and Milwaukee have almost identical dismal results as Chicago. And then to fight change when you have a failure in Madison, a failure in Milwaukee, a failure in Chicago, how can you subject children to that type of failure through the union and the power grab by them, and expect them to succeed?
Mm-hmm. Professor Correa?
Well, I think that one of the things, of course, the caller brings up, and he's exactly right, that there does seem to be a disconnect here with what we think reasonable people want schools to be able to do, and some of the outcomes are the measures. And, you know, really at the end of the day, we want kids to graduate, we want them to be able to have successful lives, and we know, period, we know dropouts are not well positioned to do that. And we're not talking dropouts from Harvard like Bill Gates. We're talking dropouts from middle school to be able to do. So he's exactly right. It is important, though, to understand that the current situation in Chicago has been, now I'm not saying this was a good idea, but it has been legally sanctioned through the bargaining process. Now, whether that's an indictment of the idea of organized labor sitting at the table and negotiating their working conditions, or black and white evidence that government people are horrible negotiators, I don't know.
Let me hold you there, Professor Correa. I'm going to see if we can maybe call you back to establish a little better telephone connection, because you're saying some important things, and we want to be able to hear all of them, a little bit of breakup. And we will try to call Steve Correa back. He is an associate professor of teacher education at St. Norbert College in De Pere. He's talking with us about the issues behind the teachers' strike in Chicago. The Chicago teachers' strike is entering its second day today. Talks ended last night without an agreement on all of the disputed issues between the Chicago Teachers Union and Mayor Rahm Emanuel. There are 29,000 teachers on strike, 29,000 teachers and support staff in the nation's third largest school system. This leaves 350,000 students without a classroom to go to today. And I believe we have reestablished our connection with Professor Correa. And Steve Correa, you are back.
Yes.
And that sounds better. Yeah, that sounds better. And so you you were saying, we had our caller who said this is all about teacher power and union power and not wanting to accept the responsibility or accountability.
And I was commending him, because I think for that insight, it does have to do with workplace conditions and how these situations have been established. Now, as I had mentioned, these have been done through the bargaining process. So the school system itself should also be held accountable that they bargained, if indeed they're holding this context that has resulted in those outcomes, meaning it's those negotiations that help to contribute to such poor outcomes. The school administration is equally responsible because they participated in this legal process. Now, of course, Wisconsin basically admitted, we don't know how to negotiate, we're bad at it, and we just made it illegal. It's not going to happen. But in Chicago, that still exists. Now, relative, though, to the issues being discussed in Chicago, this Emanuel, as the central authority, is basically of the mindset, and he's supposed to be, these are the rules, this is what we're going to do. Now, the problem is, you have the school association, the teachers, pushing back, saying, wait a minute, we're not just going to do that. So, the end of the day, they haven't had a conversation, a good public conversation that is inclusive. What are we going to do to improve these, put in measures in place, talk about how they're put in processes in place, put in schedules and put in programs, decide measures, and then come up with what we're going to do for outcomes. So, you know, the negotiation is, it ends up, the headlines get grabbed with things like teachers' unions and teacher layoffs and 16% salary increases. But the conversation really should be, what are we going to do to improve all this? Are we going to be partners? Are we going to work together? And that's where the politics get in and people start negotiating through WGN or whatever media outlet you have. And that's where I think reasonable people want to see an outcome. But boy, you have, you know, labor issues mixed in with politics and media coverage, and it gets very messy. And pretty soon then it breaks down to words like failure and liberals and conservatives and busting unions, and pretty soon you've stopped the conversation and you're using labels, and that's not helpful.
Very briefly, our caller said that Madison and Milwaukee had as dismal student performance outcomes as Chicago. Is that right?
Well, I do know that, now again, you know, broadly speaking, I do know Milwaukee's is obviously not good. I do think Milwaukee's is slightly better than Chicago. I don't know that that's a bragging point, considering where we're starting from. Madison, however, under Superintendent Nerad, really has tackled a lot of these issues. And of course, that's a political minefield for him and those people that advocate other types of changes. But I don't believe Madison is generally within that same statistical range as the Chicago schools. I think that they're on a better level, but maybe somebody can provide other information.
From Reuters News this morning, Chicago Teachers Union President Karen Lewis, who has called Chicago Mayor Rahm Emanuel a bully, said standardized tests do not take into account inner-city poverty as well as hunger and violence in the streets. Meanwhile, Mayor Emanuel said again on Monday that teachers should be evaluated based on student performance on standardized tests. That sounds like there's a sticking point here.
It really does, and they need to decide, what are we going to do with these standardized tests? And in other words, are we just going to be looking at a number? And now, that is the old No Child Left Behind sort of mindset. We have this 60% proficiency, 80%, whatever the case it might be. One of the positive changes that has been a part of Race to the Top with the Obama administration is to be able to look at standardized tests as one of many measures, and then to be able to use those in a more sophisticated analysis. Are we to include student growth? Let's look at your starting point and your ending point, and so to chart, hopefully, positive changes along that line. Now, the origin of those changes, how you credit one teacher versus another teacher, because students are not encased in a certain classroom all day, those are things that professionals can talk about. But somebody to monitor that child's performance and to be able to look at the positive changes that have happened, that's a good thing. It is one of many measures. And so I think what they're doing is, that's the forest for the trees argument. You need to be able to look at the forest and what other measures. Those might include such things as attendance, participation in extracurricular activities, how often you're involved in reading, interacting with students of multiple grade levels, community service, writing opportunities, on and on, those kind of things. And good teachers want multiple measures. They don't want a single measure. And the fact that these leaders seem to be concentrating on a single measure, there's a solution here, and they need to be able to bring that forward, to be able to talk about these multiple measures and this as a part of it. And I think most teachers embrace that.
Camille in New Berlin is with us. Hi, Camille.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. I just wanted to make a few points very quickly. Number one, this is in regards to standardized testing. We do not evaluate our pediatricians and our pediodontists by the child obesity epidemic in this state, nor by how many cavities they get. Number two, my daughter is a teacher in a school of less than 20,000, community of less than 20,000, not in this state. It's a very young community, and they have a lot of schools. Every single one of their non-performing schools is low income. And number three, there are no consequences for students if they do poorly on a test. They don't get held back. You're just telling the teachers you will have a consequence for a test that they take, and they have no consequences for it. And number four, the last one, no active teachers can call into this program because they're busy teaching today.
Yeah, thank you very much, Camille. We're sorry about that. But what about that, Professor Correa?
Well, I understand what Camille's saying, but I'm going to have to say that she is not correct. Doctors, as a profession, are measured with the outcomes of their patients. Doctors are compensated in such things, and responsible health systems measure the diabetes rate within their community. And good medical record systems do keep those in track. So we know we have a diabetes epidemic, and that's measured by things like obesity and blood pressure. And doctors are held accountable and are compensated based on those measures within their patient base. Mammograms, blood pressure checks, sigmoidoscopies, for anybody that's been through that wonderful experience with a colonoscopy. But those are measures, and doctors are held accountable for that. So if you're looking for a counterpart to compare teacher performance, the medical profession, you've got to be aware that they are not able to say, hey, wait a minute, I can't deal with these things. No, they are held accountable for those. In, again, in a part of a formula of a wide variety of ways. Doctors just cannot write off the patients. Well, they're poor, therefore XXX. That's the idea of the poverty of low expectations, the disappointment. If we don't expect much, they won't perform very high. However, she is right in that it is more challenging to get these students from these different socioeconomic backgrounds up to a certain academic level. But that's why we go to college. That's why we like to think we have intelligence and a variety of academic disciplines, like we talked before with politics and economics and sociology and statistics, to look at these measures, come together as teams and professionals, and try to come up with solutions. And so the mechanisms are there, but we need to be able to decide how we're going to do it, not if we're going to do it. And so far, this discussion is if we're going to do it. And unfortunately, in a lot of places, it isn't being done. And by the way, some school districts are doing this, and they do partner with health communities and health partnerships within and social service agencies, and those are phenomenal. So there are models out there to look at, but when you mix in the economic issues in a presidential year, it's get very difficult to see that.
We are talking about the policies and the politics of the Chicago teachers' strike, talking about the major points of contention and the message that this is sending. This is a strike with national ramifications, and we welcome your questions about the issues behind the strike and your reactions to it. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. I'm Joy Cardine talking with Associate Professor of Teacher Education at St. Norbert College in De Pere, Steve Correa, and this is the Ideas Network. This is the Ideas Network. I'm Joy Cardine. It's going to be a mostly sunny, very warm day today. We can expect high temperatures in the 80s. Stay with us. Coming up after 8 o'clock, it's On Your Money. Financial planner Kevin McKinley will be in. He'll have some good places to look for financial information, tips on savings bonds, and a warning for online shoppers. That's coming up, On Your Money, after 8. Right now, talking about the issues behind the Chicago teachers' strike with Steve Correa, who is an associate professor of teacher education at St. Norbert College. And Bob in Antioch is with us next. Hello, Bob.
Hi.
Hi.
Hi. I was just I'm 19 years old. I'm a sophomore in college, and I'm thinking about becoming a teacher. And I was wondering how this could possibly affect me and the thousands of other potential teachers, you know, in the long run.
Hmm. What do you think, Professor?
Wow, what
Correa?
A great question.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, of course, you know, Polybius said all things in the end are political. And this is the case. So teachers have to go in with eyes wide open. They need to be able to know that anytime you're in the eye this way, you know, you're going to be discussed. Let's put it that way. I don't think that this is going to result in massive openings in the state of or in the city of Chicago, which, by the way, did have a huge number of retirements in the spring. So they did open up some possibilities there. But I think it's a lesson to be able to show. You know, anybody that recalls, back in the 70s and 80s, teacher strikes were fairly common. In fact, when I was a high school senior back in Ohio, the teachers went on strike. And we were also, it was sort of like looking at a UFO. Holy cow, what is that? I've never seen Mrs. Jensen walk with a sign before outside. But that's the reality of the field. Now, how teachers professionalize themselves and how this may change in the future, a young man like this, all professions need bright, intelligent, motivated people to be able to get involved. Maybe we will learn some things from the past. Maybe it won't be necessarily cyclical. Maybe we'll spiral up to a higher level. It's exciting, but again, you need to be able to realize these issues are going to be there, and it's not children applauding at the end of the lesson every day,
but you do get some pretty good rewards emotionally at the end of the day, and hopefully enough to put food on the table, too.
Yeah, well, good luck, Bob. Do you suspect that this could be the last stand of the teachers' union in general, Professor Correa?
You know, with the way this is going, my prediction, boy, that's a danger. my prediction is that I think they're going to make nice in a few days. And then you'll see the spin machines come up. And they will, at the very least, not retreat in Chicago dramatically, which maybe not losing ground is a victory in the greater field of public union organization, because so many have lost ground. And then I think it probably shifts out west to L.A. and how they settle many of the same issues: teacher evaluation, role of standardized test performance. And boy, you know, another one in Chicago is they have declining public school enrollment. So their need to decide, what do we do with the teachers that we're not going to keep? And so there's some unresolved issues, but I guess that's what closed doors and negotiations are for.
You know, correct me or refresh my memory. The Hortonville school teachers strike in Wisconsin, I believe that was in the 70s. And I thought after that, there was a law put on the books that said, you know, we'll have an arbitrator come in and settle these disputes, and strikes are illegal.
The Hortonville strike, it was pretty interesting. I believe that was, you know, yeah, like you said, late 70s, something like that, middle 70s, I think. And, you know, that one still reverberates. And, I mean, I didn't come to Wisconsin till the early 90s, and mm-hmm. people were still talking about it then. For newcomers, it's sort of like, what are we talking about? But Wisconsin has had a variety of ways. You know, we had the QEO, the Qualified Economic Offer, that really limited teacher opportunity for striking and those kind of things during the Thompson administration. But that was a very, very contentious strike. I mean, gosh, the Wisconsin History Magazine has run some great stories on that.
Yeah. Well, we did have a caller that just wondered why isn't there some third party like an arbitrator saying, you know, a binding arbitration process when there's a dispute like this?
And that is an excellent question. And the reason is that they haven't agreed to binding arbitration. And so one party legally cannot say we're going to have binding arbitration. Mm. They have to be able to agree to that. And in Wisconsin, of course, teachers take what they get, and the school boards are not, you know, at least now, they're not going to kind of cede that power to the teachers union. And historically, they've been a little hesitant to do that because, you know, they're generally tends to be more favored to labor than there is to administration, so to speak, on those arbitrated responses. So they always go into those very gingerly.
Yeah, we have just a minute to go, and I don't know, this isn't fair, but you said you thought that both sides would make nice in a few days. Who do you think, especially when it comes to these standardized tests, that the teachers or Rahm Emanuel are going to prevail?
You know, I can't help but think that they're going to, maybe they are going to go to somebody else to be able to look at this in a variety of ways. I wish they would look north, because here in Wisconsin, it's going to be one of the measures that's used, and we're looking at a variety of other measures. But, you know, I think it's going to be who gets the microphone first afterwards and gets their "we won" message out that will probably end up coming across quite strongly.
We will follow the issue as it resolves, we hope. Thanks very much for being with us.
Very glad to be here. Thank you.
Steve Correa, Associate Professor of Teacher Education at St. Norbert College in De Pere. Thanks to Bill Martins for producing the hour. Thanks to Cynthia Schuster for on-air production, and to Amanda Magnus for on-air direction. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.